celebrate the 88th year of the founding of AA in Akron, Ohio, with this 1988 version of Joe and Charlie, brought to you by the big book, livingalive.com.
It's easy to understand the obsession of the mind. You know, we're not the only people in the world that have them. We have a group of people called Overeaters Anonymous, and they have an obsession of the mind to eat certain foods. And the mind leads them to eat the food. When they're not eating it, they're restless, irritable, and discontented. And they're filled with shame, fear, guilt, and remorse, so with the last spree. And the mind leads them to eat it, and then that triggers the allergy, and then they can't stop eating it. And they go through the same cycle over and over and over and over. And the answer is the same, a psychic change, where we can keep the emotional level down to the point that they don't need to eat that stuff, whatever it might be. I know this is true because Overeaters Anonymous uses the same 12 steps that we do in order to recover from their disease. We have a group of people called Gamblers Anonymous. Now, the real gambler tells me this, and Casey, you might straighten me out later on. The real gambler tells me this, that their mind becomes obsessed with the idea of gambling, and they really cannot differentiate the true from the false either, because they think this time I'm going to win. There's not any worry about what you're going to do when you lose your money, because you know you're going to win. And the mind leads them to place $1 $2 bet. And the real gambler tells me when he places that $2 bet and those horses run or whatever he's gambling on, that there is a charge comes inside his body that is just as strong as a thing that we get from a drink of alcohol. Not only is it a mental thing, but it's a physical factor also. And after he once starts gambling, then he can't stop. And he goes through a gambling spree, and he emerges remorseful with a firm resolution not to do that again. Repeats that cycle over and over and over. You see, we even have people obsessed with, of all things, the idea of stopping other people from drinking. And they really believe they can do it. And everybody around them says, it's obvious what you're trying is not working. But they believe they can stop them. And they have them put in jail. They take the car keys away from them. They put their clothes out in the front yard. They bring them back in the next day. They lock the door one night, leave it open the next night. They try every way in the world to stop somebody else from drinking. Now, I don't know what it is they get out of it. They get something I don't get. But their mind is obsessed with the idea that they can stop another person from drinking. And they try and try and try and literally destroy their life by doing and the life of everybody else around them. You know, I know this must be true, because Al-Anon uses the same 12-step program that AA uses, that OA uses, that Gamblers Anonymous uses. So we're all dealing with an obsession of the mind. Now, the fact that we're allergic to alcohol is extremely important. That's why we can't safely drink. But it's really beside the point. Because if I don't drink, I can't trigger that allergy. And if I don't trigger the allergy, I can't get drunk. My real problem is there's something in my head that's missing. There's a switch that's inoperative. There's something up here that tells me I can drink when it's obvious I can't drink. I have a friend who is allergic to, of all things, fish. And when he eats fish, his throat swells up and he almost chokes to death, and it's a trip right back in the hospital. Now, the fact that he's allergic to fish is beside the point. Because if he didn't eat fish, then the allergy couldn't take over and his throat couldn't swell up and he wouldn't end up in the hospital. But he got something else wrong with him. His mind from time to time tells him it's okay to eat fish. I bet it nearly always starts, well, I haven't had any fish in 90 days. Surely I can have two pieces now. Or it might say it's those damn bass I've been eating. If I'd quit eating bass and start eating crappie, I wouldn't have any problem. Or it might even say it's them damn people I've been eating fish with. Whatever the reason, he eats the fish. So I think tonight, as we've studied the doctor's opinion, it's pretty easy to see that our disease is a very simple thing, that we do have an allergy of the body that ensures when we try to drink, we end up drunk. And then we do have an obsession of the mind that ensures that it doesn't make any difference how bad we want to stop, to not drink, that our mind will always lead us back to the idea of taking a drink. And as Joe said, if you can't drink and you can't quit, then you've become absolutely powerless over alcohol. And if your life isn't unmanageable yet, keep at it a little while, and it sure as hell get that way after a while. Thank God for the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. Every successful treatment program in the world today is based on the doctor's opinion, which is found in the front of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been unchanged since the day that it was first written. You know, people say today to me, the new people, and they say, oh, Charlie, you don't understand. They say, times change. And I say, I know that. Today's 1988, and they were back there in the years of 1939. And they say, people change. And I say, I know that. The first 100 are all gone now. And we got another generation or two coming along. And they say, yeah, but places change. And I say, I know that. I say, Lord, we're in Maysville, Arkansas, not in Akron, Ohio. But then I say, there's one thing you don't understand. They say, what's that? And I say, human nature never changes. Solomon told us about it in the Bible. And I'm not sure how many thousand years ago he wrote that. Human nature never changes. We are the same drunks today that they were back in 1939. And those in 39 were the same kind of drunks that were back there when Solomon was writing about them too. Wine, whiskey, women, song, and cigarettes damn near killed us all.
Okay, and I think, and this is what I think, that we have an opportunity to have the doctor's opinion and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in our lives. And I think, you know, most alcoholics, we say, yet today with all the treatment, all the AA we have today all over the world, many of us don't realize that most alcoholics, right, that are active alcoholics today, will die never knowing they're alcoholics. We bless people as alcoholics. You know, we to have the idea in the Big Book and have the opportunity to realize that we're alcoholics, and this is the first step in recovery. In fact, you know, it's very astonishing that the only people in the world that are alcoholics are in AA. You know, the rest, I don't know what's wrong with them others out there. But we are the only alcoholics, admitted alcoholics in the world, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this, you know, we're very blessed because we were uniquely chosen for an opportunity that many alcoholics would never have, to know what the exact nature of our illness.
The human mind is a very funny thing, and it's a very powerful thing. If we can accept this in our lives, then we can accept the idea that we can't drink. As long as I thought I could drink, my mind exerted all of its energy on trying to find a way to drink. But if I can understand this and accept this in my life, then that closes the door on drinking. And as soon as that door is closed, then the mind starts looking for another door. And the mind will turn and start trying to find a way to live without drinking. And that's where we're going to go tomorrow morning. We're going to start looking at, what are we going to have to do to be able to live without drinking? And if my mind can exert one-third of the effort in trying to find a way to stay sober that it used to exert in trying to drink, then I'm probably going to be able to live sober from now on if I really work at it. Before we leave tonight, the story I'd like to tell you is about the young lady who was disappointed with the size of her breast. She wanted them to be larger than they were. And she went to a specialist named Dr. Vanderpool to find out what could be done about that. And the doctor said, well, young lady, I can most certainly help you. He said, there's several ways we can increase the size. Said, most of them, though, are a surgical procedure of some kind. And he said, I must warn you ahead of time that it's usually very painful. And said, it costs quite a bit of money. He said, actually, I have developed an exercise over the last few years that if you would use it on a constant, faithful basis, I'll guarantee you that it'll work. And it won't cost very much money, and there's not very much pain involved with it. And she said, oh, Dr. Vanderpool, that would be great. Would you tell me what it is? And he said, certainly. He said, what you need to do, he said, every morning at 8 o'clock and every afternoon at 4 o'clock, you stop whatever you're doing, you put your feet together, you put your arms out at your side, and you say, Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go. And he said, I'll guarantee you, if you'll do that at 8 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, every day, that it really will work. And she said, oh, Dr. Vanderpool, thank you very much. She goes on about her business. She begins to practice this exercise every day, 8 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, never missing. Some months later, she was on a business trip,
going through an airport terminal building, bags in hand, and she happened to look up at the clock and it said 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And she thought, oh, by God, do I dare do this here? And then she said, well, what difference would it make? They don't know me, and they wouldn't know what I'm doing anyhow. So she set her bags down, she put her feet together, and she said, Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go. And a fellow had been standing over against the wall watching her, walked up to her, and he said, lady, do you happen to know a Dr. Vanderpool? And she said, well, yes, I do. How do you know him? And he said, hickory, hickory. No, Joe and I have been practicing it, and it hadn't helped any yet.
He's awful, isn't he? My name is Joe, and I'm a real alcoholic. Through God's grace, my college program works. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since March the 10th, 1962, and for this I'm grateful. We had a real good start last night. I think we really see the importance of the first step. We laid the foundation for the whole weekend. And the first step is the only step that has to be taken 100%. And I think as we went through the last night, we were able to do it 100%. We saw the exact nature of our problem. And we realized that through the doctor's opinion that we are powerless over alcohol as a result of the physical allergy, we can't drink. As a result of the mental obsession, we can't quit. And we therefore determined that we're powerless over alcohol. Now again, our book never, this is a textbook, and a textbook is a book that gives you it teaches in a sequence, giving ideas in a sequence to arrive to conclusions. And once it begins with, it never gives you an idea that it doesn't begin to expand on that idea. And in the, now that we read see the doctor's opinion, we come to Bill's story. And Bill's story fits right behind the doctor's opinion, because once we learn about alcoholism, then we can go into the big book and to Bill's story and see alcoholism in the human life. You know, if you went to a medical school or something and you were learning about a particular disease, they would teach it to you in an academic way in a classroom setting. And that's what we learned in the doctor's opinion. And then to broaden your concept, then they would take you out into the hospital and show you a particular case of that illness. This is what Bill's story does. Now that we understand how we can see alcoholism in the human life, in Bill's story. And also, you know, in the early days of AA, I think about that particular year in Akron, and when they went out on a 12-step call, and this is what we do today, you know, we have to... To help the new alcoholic take step one, to help him see that he's powerless over alcoholism, we tell him our story. You know, most drunks think you're going, when you come to see him, they think you're going to be talking about his drinking. But when you go to an alcoholic, you tell him your story about your alcoholism. And the point of that is to allow him to find himself in you. See, he doesn't know where he is. He's lost like we were. And when a person comes to us on a 12-step call, we can find ourselves in that person. We can take the first step through him laying down his experience and his life with us. So they did this. And they knew as they wrote this book that the first thing they was going to have to do is make a 12-step call on whoever was going to be reading the book. Now, they usually went out and told their story. So Bill's story is here just like a 12-step call, is to get the new alcoholic to identify and define himself in Bill's story.
I think also we're going to see in Bill's story the unmanageability of an alcoholic's life. We're going to see Bill progress through his disease of alcoholism. Also, we're going to see Bill recover from the disease. And probably in Bill's story, if we read it and study it, we'll be able to make identification with another alcoholic. We'll be able to see our own disease through his disease. And when we see his recovery, then perhaps that's going to hold out a little hope for us, maybe the beginning of belief, that if Bill could recover from this thing, well, maybe we can too.
So Bill's story really fits in here for several different reasons. And it is the classic 12-step call. Now remember, down in Arkansas back in 1939, these first 100 people up here in the northeastern part of the United States, they wouldn't be able to come to Arkansas and 12-step me on a one-on-one basis. So the Big Book had to do that for them.
If you enjoyed this episode of Joe and Charlie from Akron in 1988 and would like to hear other versions, different seminars from different years, please visit our website, BigBookLivingLive.com.